Come on to my house, I'm gonna.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us.
Okay. Today's guest is Rhonda Wiedenbeck. Rhonda is the owner and baker at a very new bakery called Beck's Bakery. Tell me about the name of the bakery, Rhonda.
Ah, by the name. Well, my last name is Wiedenbeck, and usually people cannot spell it. And when they see it in writing, they can't say it. So Beck was the more recognizable portion of my last name, and it just made sense. And then later on, I found out that I guess it's a Swiss-German dialect that Beck means baker.
And what's different about the breads that you're going to be baking at your bakery?
Well, I'm using local grains. The wheat and rye are grown within 250 miles radius away from the bakery. And then I'm milling them fresh at the bakery. I have a 20-inch stone mill that I'm able to mill those grains fresh. And that's one of the amazing things about having access to a mill like this, to have local grains and then having access to this mill to do it fresh. The aroma, for one, that comes out of the grain bucket, the flour bucket, after they've been milled is incredible. The rye smells like molasses. I cannot believe how sweet and amazing it is. But oftentimes, you know, you get your grain from the grocery store and it's gone through a whole different process. Very rarely is it stone ground. And the process that they use, the modern milling process, are these stone roller mills. And they tend to kind of break the grain apart in pieces. So the bran comes off first, and then the endosperm and the germ come out in separate, they call them streams. And so they send them off into their streams, and they go into their own separate buckets, and then they remix them to a standardized ratio. And sometimes they don't even put the germ back in, and they still call it whole wheat, which blew me away. So I'm thrilled to be able to have a stone mill where we get everything. Whatever's in the grain is what we get, and we use it all.
I'm sure you use a certain amount of white flour.
Yes, yes.
And where do you get that?
My white flour is from a company called Central Mills, and they're out of Utah. My ideal would be to sell most of my product with local grains, because it's within this wonderful... I mean, how far did your sandwich travel? You know, was it 1,000 miles to get that white bread to, you know, to make that sandwich? Or was it just, you know, 80 miles down the road?
This area used to be... I mean, we go back, you know, probably 100 years.
Right.
This area used to be a big wheat raising area and grew prize winning wheat.
That's what
and
I hear.
And so we need to get back to that.
We need to get back to that. And for the first time in 100 years, wheat was harvested in the Mattole Valley. And it was, I was there, and I got a bag right off the combine and brought it home and milled it and made crackers.
Now, where did you get your training and education in baking? You've had some kind of on-the-job training.
Right. I used to work at a local cafe, and actually we did pastries there. So that's where I first got my hands wet, or actually my hands doughy, was working there at that bakery. And then I became really interested in bread working there, because we made a brioche briefly there, and I was really fascinated by the whole process of doing this brioche. And I, you know, my mom was a baker, and when I was a kid, for a while she spent 6 months making white bread for us every day, and everybody was envious, and so I kind of came from that background too, of just having a mom who was just fearless and went in and did whatever. But anyway, after working at that cafe, I was able to use that experience. Plus, I went to the San Francisco Baking Institute and took 3-week-long classes there. And my first one was called Whole Grains and Specialty Flours. And my teacher was a Frenchman who had a restaurant in Washington, D.C. And I just learned so much. It was really amazing. And then I got to work with bakers from all over the world. And the experience level was... mostly higher, and so I kind of had to fight.
Kind of pushed you a little bit so you could stay up with the big dogs.
Yeah, there were some obvious questions that I was like, what does that mean? I don't know what a soaker is. What's a soaker? And come to find out, it's just soaking your grains overnight. And it's a really significant thing to do to improve flavor and texture of your bread.
Now, the flip side of that is you've also taught classes in baking. And I think that's so interesting that a person who goes into the business of selling bread is going to teach somebody how to make bread themselves.
Yeah.
But do you think that's important?
I think it's important. I mean, I think about that, the whole heart, the idea of the hearth and sharing fresh baked bread. I mean, everybody just swoons over that. And it just brings such happiness to households, I think, when the bread comes out like that. And, you know, I figure it's one of those life skills that has been forgotten, and it's not that hard to bring that back. And my focus is, you know, you and I have talked a lot about how different we are because you're a bread
styles.
Teacher. Yeah, I'm very precise and let's weigh everything.
And me, not so much.
Not so much. And so I've tried to, you know, mellow out a little bit on my preciseness because these folks aren't doing production baking. They don't need to meet, you know, a certain yield and stuff like that. So I try to be a little looser on it than I used to. But yeah, it's just, to me, it's really important to have a skill like that so that you know you can always make bread. And I feel like too, you know, people are really busy, and if they have time to make bread, that's so wonderful. Please make it. But if they don't, then, you know, they know where they can get some good stuff.
I know. I think that's the thing too, is just kind of upping the appreciation of what's involved in making a good loaf of bread. Mm-hmm. And it's just like farming, you know, if you learn what it takes to farm, even if you don't farm yourself, you appreciate what the farmer does, and you appreciate what the baker does and the cook and, you know, all these sorts of things.
Indeed.
Appreciating
and
it.
And you develop your palate about it. And then you start tasting other bread, and bread that you thought was really amazing, you're like, oh, this isn't as amazing as I thought it was. Uh-huh.
Let's talk about sourdough starter, because, you know, it kind of develops a taste that is special and unique to the area in which you've created it.
Right.
So you must have your Humboldt starter.
I keep three starters. I have a rye starter, a white starter, and a wheat starter. I actually have a spelt starter too, but I'm not actively feeding that one. That one kind of lives in the refrigerator and gets pulled out every once in a great while, hopefully more frequently. But yeah, the sourdough starters, you know, I remember being really impressed to hear, you know, I have a sourdough starter that was from my great-great-grandma from Alaska. And just like, wow. But going to these classes and talking with these expert bread bakers, they're like, ah, oh, don't be swayed. That doesn't mean anything. You're not, after 2 weeks of being in one region, one area, and you're feeding, whatever you're feeding it, whatever your climate is, the kitchen climate is, it's all going to change. The the ecosystem within that is all going to change. And so the first 2 weeks, it might taste like what it was from Alaska, but after that, it's going to change to whatever the conditions are where you're at. And so I have starters that I have tried to give regional names too. Like I have my Alder Grove sourdough because
nice.
The bakery's in the Alder Grove Business Park there, and I figure whatever Alder Grove has, that's adding flavor profile to it. And then I have a West End Rye, which is my rye starter, and you know, I can look across the way and see West End Road. So
Let's talk about what products you are currently making.
I'm making breads. All of them are long fermentation breads, meaning a portion, or in the case of sourdough, all of it is, we call it retarded, put in the refrigerator overnight, or just set out as a pre-ferment, which is flour mixed with your yeast or your sourdough starter. And then I'm doing crackers, which has become a pretty neat thing. They're hard to make. I hand roll them, and so I don't have to work out anymore. My arms are definitely getting buff. And then I'm doing a granola, which so far doesn't have local grains in it. And I look forward to the time when somebody starts growing oats, and then we can roll them.
Roll them.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And use that. And then I have this spice mix that I'm making called Duca. And it's a different thing that you dip your bread in olive oil, then you dip it in this powdered spice mix. And it's, you know, it's something different than...
That sounds fabulous.
Yeah, something different than balsamic and vinegar. Yeah, it's
a
different way to do it. There's other products, you know, later on down the line that I'd like to work on, but this is enough so far.
Well, this is Jennifer Bell, and I've had the pleasure of talking with Rhonda Wiedenbeck, owner and baker at Beck's Bakery. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna